All right, I'm asking you to imagine your nativity set, either the one you grew up with or one you have now, in your, put it in your mind's eye, and is somebody willing to, several willing to describe it, talk about it a little bit. Okay, Beth?
No disrespect, but I think Luke and I last night were throwing some of the plastic nativity across the room.
Well, let's see if I can get this going the right way. There you go. This is the plastic nativity set that we are referring to that Beth and Luke were throwing across the floor. And we also have we added a member that probably would not have been seen in a Jewish land at all is the pig, which is an important addition to the Fisher-Price Little People nativity set right here. My grandkids, I've bought one for my grandkids, and they each have one, and they really enjoy playing with it. Other? Jessica?
We had a wooden one, and all the figures were sort of abstract, so we were allowed to play with it and move things around and everything.
So what do you mean the figures were abstract? Okay.
So you had trouble sometimes telling Joseph and the wise men apart.
Okay. Telling Joseph and the wise men apart. Yes, Karen?
Well, I hate to say this about Jared, but he's not here. But he was really little, really, really little. And
the microphone.
The two families came to Enterprise to have Christmas with us, and all of a sudden the baby Jesus disappeared off of the little Mexican one we had, and we didn't find him. Jared often hid things in our house.
Okay. Okay.
I loved him for that.
Okay. So the grandchild took the baby Jesus, but was lost for a couple years, but was you found him when you moved. This is a good story. I like this. Yes.
When Abby was little, and for several years, our nativity scene always had a dinosaur or two.
Ah, okay.
A pterodactyl,
a dinosaur in the nativity scene.
Uh
huh. Yeah.
They weren't hungry, but.
Yeah. You hope they weren't hungry. Okay, Tim, and then I've got Nathan in the back.
We had a tradition growing up that whoever unwrapped the Christ child got a blessing that year, but the Christ child was the same size as the sheep, so they never really usually got a sheep, but us kids would kind of fight over who could get the Christ child to get blessed.
So were all of the sheep and the Christ in wrapped?
All wrapped in newspaper, like in a big box.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's a problem when the sheep and the Christ child are the same size. Yep, but you got a blessing once in a while. Okay, Ethan.
My parents still have it, but I think we're down to two wise men, maybe one sheep, and I think Joseph has been back and forth to found and lost. We've looked at all the Legos. We've looked at all the action figure place because we just take the pieces and play with it with everything else that we would play with. It was just part of playing that time of year.
Yeah.
To go grab the people and add it to the game.
Well, I think what I'm hoping that the part of the point of this is that, you know, it's not the story of Christ is not just something that we're to put on a shelf, you know, and take off maybe once or a year and dust it off, but it is something that is a part of our story. And I like the idea that it was a character that you played with, in and out of the season. And so, because the nativity, it's not about them being necessarily historically accurate, whatever that is. I mean, I was in the Holy Land a couple of years ago, and they have several places where it could have been that Christ was born. But we know that it's in Bethlehem, some it's in a cave, and what a manger looks like, and all those different pieces. But it's the fact that we sang in O Little Town of Bethlehem, be born in us again today, be born in us today, is that we incorporate this important event in our lives today. And so I've got a couple of paintings. I need to go this way. to just kind of show how that it's very culturally different. This is a nativity scene from Thailand. And you notice any of the animals up there that might be a little bit different than what we're used to seeing? You've got, looks like water buffalo there. Certainly the outfits are different. This is a very different kind of manger. So there's one. This is one from Korea. I like the rooster there. This is one from Guatemala. What do you notice in that picture, kids? Are there any children left here? Or adults, what do you see that's maybe different? There's a hat, right? Looks like a Stetson almost. Yeah, there's a goose up in there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Mary does look like she just actually had a baby. Right. Yeah. Spoken by someone who's had three and not too long ago. Right. Yeah, there we go. Okay. This is one of my favorite. This is one from England. And look at all of the sheep and how they have the different hats. I love their hats. Too fast. This is one from India. Definitely different colors, and Mary has a different outfit on, I'd say. I love the colors of this one. It's from Malaysia. What do you notice about this one? Yeah, there's children in there. No animals, children. I love that.
And they're children with modern dress.
Children with modern dress, yeah. And this one I chose as our theme slide because I think it's kind of provocative because this would maybe look more like today. And I'm assuming that the three men with the birthday hats on are the Magi or the we three kings. Isn't that neat? So the idea is that this is not a static picture or a long time ago story in a faraway place, but it's now. And it's in the particulars of our life and times that Jesus is born in us today. And the thing about this story is saying yes to God as Mary did is risky. It's risky business. As we heard the story and then sang parts of it, that gospel, the Christmas gospel, begins with a history and politics. Did you hear it? There was a emperor, and there were taxes and big government. So this is the big story, if you will, or the context. But then the narrative shifts, and it focuses to a family, a man and a pregnant woman who's about to give birth. And Luke tells a story about the faithfulness of this woman, Mary, and Matthew accounts for the compassion of the man, Joseph. And in the particulars of their story is the vulnerability of an unborn child coming into the world. And later, at the very end, we read that it's a refugee family going into a foreign country, going into Egypt to find safety. So this is a story about a family that's in an uncomfortable, undignified, and vulnerable place. And I think that it's not unlike the story that many refugees find themselves in similar situations today. And this story also has unexpected parts. Mary wasn't expecting to become pregnant, and I'm sure the inn wasn't expecting for the parents of God in the flesh to come. and the world wasn't ready either. Ready for God to come among us in the form of a powerless baby. Because here, God is no longer dangerous, threatening, or removed. God, you know, way out there. But God is shining forth in the most unwanted and unsuspected of places. God, born as a baby, vulnerable and helpless, and actually hidden in ordinary life. Now, there is no other world religion that makes this claim. God became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. That's what the Message version said. And you know, this is the scandal or the outrage of Christianity. Think about that. God became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. Now, we have a theological word for this. I'm just going to put this up. It's, anybody know what the theological word is? Incarnation, right. But, you know, what does that mean? It's fairly easy to discuss and have opinions about God. And we often think of this as religion. But it is much harder to be present to God when God is revealing God's self in the vulnerability of relationship. Because the first, just having opinions and discussions, allows us to maintain ourselves as we are. And the second usually challenges the status quo, and we're invited to respond with our ordinary lives and take the risk of being Jesus with skin on. Now, sometimes it seems that we have trouble letting Jesus be human. We prefer the miracles and the stories that make Jesus different from the rest of us. But this morning, I'm going to invite us just into the incarnation, which is that mystery of Advent, the 4 weeks of preparing that we don't walk just right through it, is that God became flesh and dwelt among us. God with us in Jesus is exactly what it looks like when a human being knows that God and human flesh are not opposites. But rather, one with the Spirit of the living God. Jesus claimed that he was the firstborn of many. Firstborn of many, and we're part of that many that came after Jesus, and prayed that we might be one as he was one with his Abba, with Father. That's really hard to comprehend, isn't it? But Jesus came to show us, to parent us, to do something with us in partnership, not in spite of us or instead of us. So if we can allow Jesus to be like us, which what would it be for Jesus to be like us? Flesh and blood with limitations, sometimes feeling cut off, confused, maybe tossed here and there by feelings emerging from deep inside. Any of those situations sound familiar? But still capable of living a life of compassionate action and fearless truth-telling, then I think this has meaning for our ordinary lives. Simple things like being kind to one another, sharing, just even noticing others around us. Jesus was really good about that. And it seemed like Jesus had the time, the space, that when someone touched his cloak and needed his attention, he stopped and gave it to her. Or when someone was accused of sinning, being a sinner, Jesus embraced. We think of these different stories that we have of Jesus. And this is in contrast to just maybe our ideas or words that sometimes I think we prefer. Because unlike the Magi, we do not tend to allow stars to divert us to a new and unknown place. But God may interrupt our plans and create new ones. Anybody have God interrupt their plans and move them in a different direction? I have this year, heading off to Ramallah in the spring. So I want to just close with a poem that Andy brought to our attention, Andy Henry, a couple of Christmases ago, that has stuck with me. And it's called The Work of Christmas, and it's by Howard Thurman. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, feed the hungry, release the prisoner, rebuild the nations, to bring peace among brothers and sisters, to make music in the heart. So this poem alludes to the reality that Christmas is not an ending, but it's rather it's a beginning. God is not content to be just a spirit, but to take on flesh. So if we can make room enough for God to be born in us today, then Jesus, through his life, which continues in us, his followers, will not only show us, but empower us how to do and be God in flesh and blood in the neighborhood. So part of the work of Christmas becomes this: to take the light that we hold in our hands and share it with a hurting and hungry world, a world where young women bring vulnerable children into existence, a world where refugees seek shelter, and a world where the Christmas story that we know so well remains unfinished. So as we enter into our time of open worship, just a time of waiting to listen, what is God speaking to you? What is God speaking to us this morning? How is God being born in you, in us today? If you feel like you have a message for the community, then I'd ask you to stand and be faithful to that leading.